In the late 1980s, a small, ambitious studio named Bethesda Softworks was founded on the outskirts of the burgeoning digital world, setting its sights on the expansive universe of video games. Initially, Bethesda cut its teeth on sport and simulation titles, crafting experiences that pushed the boundaries of what personal computers could achieve. Games like Gridiron laid the groundwork, blending intricate simulation with the thrills of American football, and showcasing Bethesda's commitment to depth and realism. But as the 90s dawned, the studio's aspirations grew, driven by a passion to create a new kind of game. In this case, it was an action title, with a sprinkling of role-playing within. Their idea was simple. You would be a team of fighters going from town to town fighting in arenas to become the grand champion of the realm. But then the towns grew, and then the space between the towns grew, and eventually the team was making a full-blown RPG offering players an entire world to explore filled with dungeons, cities, and wilderness, all alive with history, lore, and danger. Today, we're going to look at exactly how an action game became the foundation for one of the most popular role-playing series in the world. So grab your map and compass, for we're about to embark on a journey through the vast landscapes of Tamriel, uncovering relics of the past and forging our path in the annals of gaming history. Join us as we delve into the making of the Elder Scrolls Arena on its 30th anniversary, exploring the challenges and triumphs that led to the creation of a world without boundaries. All on today's episode of A Trip Down Memory Card Lane. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. I hope these words find you well. Hello and welcome to the 187th episode of our video game history podcast, A Trip Down Memory Card Lane. Each week, we'll tell you a story relevant to the current week in gaming history. It can be about a game or the people that created it. It can be about a console or the technology that brought it to life. We often talk about the companies that brought it all together, making our hobby a reality. While telling you each story, we hope to teach you something new about the topic, what it took from the world as its inspiration, or what it gave back to the world in its legacy. Today, we're going back to 1994, to the release of a game that would lay the foundational stones for an epic saga that's still ongoing to this day, The Elder Scrolls Arena, which is the first in the Elder Scrolls series. I'm David Kasten, and as always, I'm joined by the lore keeper of the Scrolls themselves. He's my co-host, Rob Kasten. Rob, how does the weight of such a monumental task affect you?
Well, Dave, much like with any task, you just have to handle it one scroll at a time.
We scroll all day, every day.
Still do it one at a time, don't you?
Still one scroll at a time. Yeah, I can't refute that in any way, shape, or form. Just, it must suck to be so knowledgeable.
Nah, it's pretty cool.
Okay. All right. Well, moving on. Speaking of tomes of knowledge, what happened during this week in gaming history? What's in the tomes?
Well, Dave, on March 29th, 1998, the action RPG Parasite Eve was released, blending horror elements with a compelling narrative and RPG mechanics. The game stood out for its cinematic storytelling, innovative battle system, and the integration of real-world science into its horror-themed storyline. 26 years later, Parasite Eve is still celebrated for its atmosphere and depth. It has remained a cult classic, admired for its unique position at the crossroads of RPG and survival horror genres.
I loved Parasite Eve. We've covered this before. You've never even heard of it, touched it, anything like that.
Negativo, as is the norm.
It was such a great game that came like right on the heat. I mean, it's right in that same era of, you know, we talked about Vagrant Story, came in that era, came right after Final Fantasy. Like, that came right in like the golden age of Square RPGs, and that was a fantastic addition to it. I loved Parasite Eve. It was fantastic. So
Yeah, nope, nothing for me on that one.
Rats. All right, what else you got?
Well, on March 27, 2001, the innovative God game Black and White was created, making a significant moment in video gaming history.
Mm-hmm.
The game was celebrated for its groundbreaking artificial intelligence, allowing players to influence the behavior of their worshippers and creatures through actions interpreted as good or evil.
Mm-hmm.
Its release 23 years ago captivated gamers with its unique blend of strategy, simulation, and moral decision-making, earning acclaim for its inventive gameplay and profound choices it presented.
I wish they would make another one. I have both 1 and 2. They are good games. I wish they'd make another one. And I frequently find people calling for that online whenever someone goes, "Do you remember the game Black and White? Yada, yada, yada." So I'm not the only one. They would definitely do well making another one.
Well, you can keep hoping, Dave. You never know.
True statement.
And speaking of games getting sequels, I'm sure this next one likely will, because 22 years ago, the groundbreaking action RPG Kingdom Hearts was released on March 28, 2002, weaving together the universes of Disney and Square Enix. Its release not only captivated fans of Disney and Square Enix alike, but also established a new standard for crossover video games, leading to a beloved series that continues to enchant players with its unique blend of charm, adventure, and heartfelt storytelling.
All right. Well, we've covered Kingdom Hearts before, and I'm a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. It is good games.
Yeah, yep, they can keep making those.
Right you are. And unlike continuing making games, it was on March 23rd, 2006, 18 years ago this week, that Sony officially discontinued the original PlayStation. Closing a chapter on the console that revolutionized the video game industry with its introduction in December of 1994. Known for popularizing 3D graphics and CD-ROM technology, the PlayStation was home to iconic titles like Final Fantasy VII and Metal Gear Solid. Its discontinuation marked Sony's progression in the gaming industry, leaving a lasting legacy of innovation and influence in gaming culture.
PlayStation was a good era. We've talked about that.
Indeed we have, but they've continued with a knockout every time since.
They really have. That is one thing that's true, is that that brand, the PlayStation brand, has been consistent ever since. Can't refute that in any way, shape, or form.
No, you cannot, Dave. It was 11 years ago this week, on March 26, 2013, that BioShock Infinite was released, taking players from the underwater city of Rapture to the soaring heights of Columbia. BioShock Infinite was praised for its thought-provoking story, complex characters, and its exploration of themes such as American exceptionalism and quantum physics. Its release was met with critical acclaim, solidifying its place as a standout title in the gaming landscape. And on March 24th, 2016, Dark Souls 3 was launched, continuing the renowned and challenging action RPG series developed by From Software. Known for its punishing difficulty, intricate world design, and deep lore, Dark Souls 3 has further solidified this franchise's status as a cornerstone of modern gaming. The game's release, which was 8 years ago this week, brought players back to the hauntingly beautiful and treacherous realms, offering intricate environments to explore, formidable foes to conquer, and a complex narrative to unravel.
I have nothing for that. That is all you.
Fantastic game. Go get your butt kicked.
Which one do you like the most?
3.
Yeah, 3 is
your favorite. It's 3 for sure. I mean, Elden Ring excluded. If we're just talking Dark Souls 3, Elden Ring, I feel, is a very close competitor. I haven't beaten it, so I obviously, you know, just hadn't gotten around to it as much as I've been wanting to.
Mm-hmm.
But from what it has potential. So as long as the end doesn't flounder, I think that Elden Ring could be the next number one in the Souls for me. But, you know, I'll just have to finally buckle down and get it finished. So onward, never upward.
Onward and upward.
And finally, Dave, on March 30th, 2002, one of your favorite games.
Yeah, what's that?
Katie in Meow Meow Land.
Oh, no.
This game invited players into a whimsically surreal world inspired by Alice in Wonderland. The point-and-click adventure follows Katie as she navigates the bizarre and charming realm of Meow Meow Land, filled with puzzles, quirky characters, and delightful visuals. Praised for its creativity and humor, Katie and Meow Meow Land offers a refreshingly lighthearted journey, showcasing the endless possibilities of imaginative game design, and one that Dave would love to tell you all about.
When we have time. We don't have time right now.
No, right now, I think we should get on to Bethesda.
We should get on to Bethesda. After finishing graduate school, Christopher Weaver was hired by the American Broadcasting Company, as we know it, ABC, where he wrote several articles about the importance of alternative distribution systems and how satellites and broadband networks would impact network television, which landed him the position of manager of technology forecasting. Basically, he was the guy that would say, this is the future. This is where we need to put our money. If you don't, you're dumb. Go for it. After his articles were quoted by several magazines that, you know, as someone who saw the future of broadcasting and technology in general, he was recruited by the National Cable Television Association and helped create its Office of Science and Technology. There, he helped design high-speed data communication systems for several member companies in the National Cable Television Association. Eventually, this earned him a spot as the chief engineer to the United States House Energy Subcommittee on Communications and Technology. In that position, he influenced legislation that affected the telephone, that affected television, and obviously cable television industries. In the midst of all that, he also founded a company called Video Magic Laboratories with a friend from MIT. And through their connections to MIT, they were put in touch with a wealthy family who basically gave them a chunk of money and said, go make us more money.
Well, that's pretty sweet.
I know, right? As part of Video Magic Labs, they developed several technologies, including location-based entertainment that was said to be cutting edge, but probably ahead of its time. It was not commercially viable. It was a not very good investment on the company, brought very little return for it. And afterwards, the people pulled their money out and said, eh. And so really that venture was short-lived. But afterwards, after leaving Video Lab, and then after the House Subcommittee tenure ended, Weaver founded Media Technology Associates Limited in June of 1981. At Media Technology, he worked with a man named Ed Fletcher. Ed Fletcher was an electrical engineer that had also worked with Weaver at Video Magic. And here at Media Technology Associates Limited, what would just later become Media Technology, they first collaborated on video games for the Laserdisc systems. We've covered that before. The game that we covered it on was Dragon's Lair. We have a whole episode on Dragon's Lair, so go check it out. And we know that, based on that story, that Laserdisc systems was short-lived. It was a popular emerging technology in the early 80s. And then when the video game industry crashed in 1983, it never really recovered. Laserdisc crashed with it, and that was that. So Laserdiscs were out, and the company, Media Technology Limited, is waiting for new contracts. They don't know what's next. And while doing so, they purchased an Amiga personal computer, and Fletcher and Chris Weaver began to experiment with it. Now, Ed Fletcher was a fan of American football, and he suggested that they create a football video game for the Amiga. Weaver had no interest in the sport. He knew nothing about football, but also, like, there was nothing on the horizon and they had no other project ideas. So he was like, yep, let's do it. So over the next 9 months, they developed what would become a game called Gridiron out of Weaver's house in Bethesda, Maryland. Initially, Fletcher's idea was to use lookup tables to map player inputs to predetermine outcomes. So it was kind of the way everyone was doing it at the time. And basically, if you ran a play, they'd run the stats of everyone against the stats of everyone else, and that would determine whether or not you were going to be successful or not, right?
Right.
But systems like that are, you know, even if you base it on a percentage, after a while, they kind of get predictable because nothing ever changes. You're always going to gravitate towards the plays and the moves that have a greater percentage of completion, and therefore it would get repetitive. Chris knew this. Chris disliked the notion of using lookup tables. We call them arrays. And he encouraged Fletcher to work on a more realistic physics-based system for the game. And Fletcher agreed. On June 28, 1986, Christopher Weaver founded Bethesda Softworks on the proverbial kitchen table of his Bethesda home as a division of Media Technology. Gridiron ended up being the company's first game. It was released in late 1986, later that year, for the Amiga, Atari ST, and Commodore 64. Initially, they had printed a few hundred copies and distributed them in plastic bags, but to their surprise, they were sold out within a week. Now, we've learned this part of the story before in episode 92, so if you want to learn about it in detail, go check that out, but we're going to glance over it again. So at the time, a little company, relatively unknown, wink, wink, Electronic Arts, it was in the process of making a new football video game at the request of their founder, Skip Hawkins. And they needed some help because it wasn't going great. And they went out there and saw that Gridiron was a good game. It was similar to what they were looking to do. And so they went to Bethesda and they ended up hiring them to help them finish developing what would later become Madden Football. That's what the episode is on. And if in exchange for developing Madden Football, EA would help distribute future versions of Gridiron to other platforms. So you help us make our game and we'll distribute Gridiron to a larger audience. And they had this agreement in place for a few years. And then sometime about June of 1988, development on Madden was progressing nicely, but in the past roughly 2 years, almost 2 years, there were no new versions of Gridiron that had been released. So basically, Bethesda was holding their end of the bargain, but Electronic Arts was not. So Bethesda packed up and said, we're done. We're not going to work on Madden anymore. And they sued Electronic Arts for basically like a breach of contract in the amount of $7.3 million. They claimed that EA was not going to release their game, but instead decided that they would hold it and incorporate features of Gridiron into John Madden Football. Now, that case was later resolved out of court, so we don't exactly know the details of the agreement. We do know that Bethesda never went back to work on it, and of course EA finished John Madden Football, and it's the biggest football game, one of the biggest games in the world. So we know that that happened. So Bethesda Softworks carried on as both a developer and a publisher. In 1989, they developed and published Wayne Gretzky Hockey. They followed that up with Wayne Gretzky Hockey 2 in 1990 and Wayne Gretzky Hockey 3 in 1992. So hockey, they took a shot at. They also decided to do it from the non-player standpoint and do like a manager coaching type game when they created Hockey League Simulator in 1990 and followed that up with Hockey League Simulator in 1992. And they tried their hand at basketball too. They worked on NCAA Basketball Road to the Final Four and NCAA Basketball Road to the Final Four 2 in 1992 and 1994, respectively. But they weren't just about sport games. They soon ventured into licensed titles as well. In 1991, they developed and published the very first video game that was licensed out of the Terminator series, which was called what else but the Terminator. They followed that up with Terminator 2029 in 1992 and the Terminator Rampage in 1993. And then 1991 also saw an NES game that was based on the movie Home Alone. And there was also an NES version of Where's Waldo? And then somewhere in the mix of all this, they decided that they were going to create a game that would become the beginning of a series that they are perhaps known for today. But first, do you have something clever and engrossing that you'd like to share with the world, but you really don't know how? Are you looking for everything that you need to start your own podcast, perhaps, so that you can tell the world about all the things that interest you? Our friends at Zencastr have created an all-in-one podcasting suite of tools that makes it easier than ever to create your own podcast.
With Zencastr, it's super easy to record a podcast. Everyone logs in using their web browser, and you just start recording a high-quality podcast right away. It allows you to record up to 4K videos with your guests, and with Zencastr's multi-layered backups, you always have the highest quality recordings, even if the connection is unstable.
And with Zencastr, you never have to worry about what you sound like. Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs, gets rid of all those awkward pauses, lets you set the right podcast loudness, lets you reduce background noise. Basically, you go through a menu and say, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. And then you click a single button and it does everything that you want it to do.
And even if the thought of podcasting overwhelms you because you think you need tons of different tools and services, relax. Those days are over. With Zencastr's all-in-one podcasting platform, you can create your podcast in one place and distribute it to Spotify, Apple, and other major destinations.
So if you'd like to start your own podcast, or maybe you want to take your current podcast to the next level, we've got a deal for you. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use our offer code, one word, memory card lane, and you'll get 30% off the first month of any Zencastr played platform.
Sign up for a Zencastr today, and you can experience the same ease in producing your own high-quality podcast as we do each week. Go out and share your ideas with the world.
So, for their next big act, a team of developers at Bethesda Softworks was looking to make an action game that had a little bit of role-playing on the side. It was described early on as a medieval-style gladiator game. And the three developers on the project, Ted Peterson, Vijay Lakshman, and Julian LeFay, were also longtime fans of pen and paper role-playing games. In fact, Tamriel itself, the world in which the Elder Scrolls series takes place, was originally created by some of the staff for use in a weekly D&D campaign. Now, the initial idea that they came up with for their game was clear. The player, along with a team of fighters, would travel the world, fighting other teams in their arena until the player became the grand champion in the world's capital, which was known as the Imperial City. So it would basically be like a team of four, a party of four fighters walking around from city to city. At each city, there'd be an arena, and it'd be an arena like a combat, like a fighting game. And you'd fight, become the champion of that arena, move on to the next, you know? But as they created the game, they had to add things to do in between the arenas. So side quests, right? And side quests are typically role-playing in nature. At least at the time, the design of them was role-playing in nature. Go pick up this for this reason. Go pick up this for this reason. So not before long, the team found themselves focusing more on the side quests and less on the tournaments. Because doing quests was way more fun because you're telling a story, you're writing a story, right? Writing side quests is way more fun than just making an arena. I mean, that's the way to put it. So they went with what was fun. And when it became clear that the side questing was going to result in a better game, they dropped the idea of fighting tournaments altogether to focus on quest lines, to start building dungeons, to build out the towns, and so on and so forth. So suddenly, their little action game with a little bit of role-playing on the side was a full-blown RPG. Now, Bethesda had never worked on an RPG before, right? We went through some of their early games, like Wayne Gretzky Hockey and Hockey League Simulator and NCAA Football, or Basketball, rather, and Gridiron, which is football. They did have other games, too. There was an action game, a few action games, a puzzle game. They were games that they, like, didn't develop by themselves and publish, so it's not like they were only doing the sports. Of course, we talked about Home Alone and Terminator and that. So they did have some action games. But the point is they had never attempted an RPG in any way, shape, or form. So there was uncertainty around their ability to make it happen. Ted Peterson, one of the developers of what would become Elder Scrolls Arena, recalled an experience in which he was talking about the game with the guys at Sirtech, who at the time were developing Wizardry, Crusaders of the Dark Savant. Now, Sirtech had done the Wizardry series. We had covered them as well as Wizardry. It was episode 106. Wizardry is one of the three games that we kind of consider to be the foundation, the holy trifecta foundation of role-playing, the other one being Ultima. And what was the third? Why can't I think of the third right now? Anyway.
I don't know, Dave.
Me. I know. So the guys at Sirtech were literally laughing at the team at Bethesda. Basically, like, you guys can't do it, right? You've never done it. You think that you can make a full-blown RPG. You don't understand what it takes to make a full-blown RPG. But this team was dedicated. They wanted to see the process through. Aside from pen and paper gaming, they were also fans of the Ultima Underworld series, which became their main inspiration for Arena. Ultima is a fantastic series, which we did a whole episode on back in 2022. It's episode 94. If you'd like to learn all about the Ultima series and its creator, Richard Garriott. But the developers also say that they were very fond of a game called Legends of Valor. Now, Legends of Valor was a role-playing game that was designed in 1992 by a company called Synthetic Dimensions. It was played in the first-person perspective. It's noted for being one of the first RPGs that ever used a smooth-scrolling 3D engine that was similar to the style of Wolfenstein 3D. It should also be noted that Legends of Valor was particularly complex for its time. You had gameplay mechanics where you were required to eat, to drink, to sleep, to pay taxes, and you had to take out life insurance.
Wow.
The whole game takes place in one city, and while that may seem boring in like just at face value, there are over 100 locations in that one city. Several taverns, hostels, shops, guilds, temples, prisons, and other random places of interest. You can join guilds or temples like Thieves Guild or stuff like that. It had a lot to do. You'd get quests from various citizens, and it had a whole plot line. Basically, like, you arrive in a city and it gets quarantined to an outbreak. you are there to visit your cousin, but he goes missing. And so you basically start this quest to go find him. And throughout the quest, you manage to restore a king to power and slay a demon en route to finding your cousin Sven. So.
Wow.
It's quite a whatchamacallit. It's sad. I mean, it's said to be a good game, but they only made one of them because it did just okay. The sequels were all supposed to take place outside of the one city that the first one takes place in. So anyway. But, I mean, its critical scores are on, like, the 90s. That's not bad. It rated well. But realistically, the most important thing it's done now is served as inspiration for what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
When asked about these influences later on, Peterson said that they weren't really doing anything new. That's how the team perceived themselves. That all the systems they put in place, the experience systems, the combat systems, those were taken from D&D. You know, they borrowed from Ultima and they borrowed from Legends of Valor. This team was not doing anything new. In hindsight, all they really did was do it on a much, much, much bigger scale than anyone had ever tried before. So when the team started playing the game in the first person, they determined that traveling as a party of four, a group of fighters, wasn't very much fun. So a decision was made pretty quickly for it to become a single-person role-playing game. And the team continued to work on it. They fleshed out the role-playing systems, the quests, the dungeons, and so on and so forth. You know, the game was originally due to be released on Christmas Day of 1993, but it wasn't ready yet. On top of that, although the team had dropped all of the arena combat from the game, all of the material, marketing, packaging, and otherwise, had been printed up with the title Elder Scrolls Arena. So they had no choice but to stick with the Elder Scrolls Arena, even though there were no arenas. And so to solve this, the team then came up with a lore-friendly explanation for this. And it goes that because the Empire of Tamriel was so violent, it had been nicknamed the Arena. And then the question begs, why the Elder Scrolls? And there's no good answer for that either. It was Lakshma who came up with it, and it said that he doesn't know what it means any more than the rest of them.
Nice. That's great.
So the words eventually came to mean mystical tomes of knowledge that tell of its past, present, and future. And they worked on the game. Like I said, it was supposed to come out Christmas Day of 1993, but it wasn't ready, and ended up coming out in March of 1994, a couple months later. As it turns out, leaving the name Arena posed a little bit of a problem. When you're marketing an arena combat game that isn't an arena combat game, people tend to take notice, you know? Distributors did not like being misled, therefore they didn't want the game. And so initially, Bethesda only distributed 3,000 copies of this game out into the world.
Wow.
And as this was happening, the team was positive that they had just put Bethesda out of business, right? Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to put it. They were sure that they had just put the company out of business. But the game was good. And soon word of mouth began to spread and people began to buy it. And slowly but surely, it became more and more popular. It became considered to be a cult classic. And people just kept buying it. Like 18 months after it was released, people were still buying it at a higher volume than in the beginning. So it was pretty popular. Little fun fact, It was released both on floppy disk and CD-ROM. The CD-ROM version is a deluxe version that has some enhanced speech and CGI sequences. The gentleman that we now associate Bethesda and the series with, Todd Howard, who is like the face of Bethesda now, he was actually hired in 1994 while they were working on Arena. And his first job in the company was working as a CD-ROM version tester. So he tested Arena, the CD-ROM version. He doesn't even have an in-game credit for it. He's got a number of uncredited roles in the company, and this is one of them. He wasn't added. He'd be added to the team like as a producer, like in a design role for the Terminator games. And he didn't join the Elder Scrolls series until Daggerfall, the second one. So, and now, like, what one was he? Was it Morrowind or Oblivion? I think Morrowind was the first one when he was put in charge of design, like producer. And then he was definitely Oblivion and Skyrim. So, or maybe not even. I think Rolston was Oblivion. Todd's definitely the guy now, though. So he's working on
it. Couldn't tell you myself, Dave. I don't know much about that. You know me, I normally learn about the development teams here.
Yeah, he's definitely the guy now. No doubt about that whatsoever, because he's working on 6. So, Arena, like I said, it was critically praised from the get-go. It even won Computer Gaming World's Role-Playing Game of the Year in 1994. So, there were publications that saw the potential in it, even though it was, as Peterson put it, nothing new, just on a much bigger scale. One guy said that it's proof that there is a lot more room for innovation in the industry, which was obviously true, because in the last 30 years, we've seen all of that innovation come to fruition, you know? And yeah, if you want to still play it, you actually can, because it's available for free from Bethesda nowadays.
You can
actually go on to Steam or goodoldgames.com, GOG.com, and you can get the game for free on either one. I actually picked it up and played the Steam version for a little bit, so I can confirm that it works on modern machines.
And how did it fare?
It fared just fine. It fared just fine. I will tell you, there is an open source project that moves the game into a more modern engine with some quality of life upgrades that I think I'd like to try. Because, for instance, this version is controlled by mouse, like click the top of the screen to go forward, click the right side of the screen to turn, and so on and so forth. There's no keyboard movement. And that's one of the things that the new engine brings to this. And I think that would be a huge difference for my enjoyability in this, if that makes sense. So,
yeah.
Rob, do you know anything about Arena?
I do not. This is all new to me.
Okay, so Arena takes place in the entirety of Tamriel. It's one of the biggest open worlds by like land mass, if not the biggest open world by land mass ever created. Literally, like, so all the games after that, Morrowind and Oblivion and Skyrim, like, those are all specific parts of Tamriel, right? Like, Skyrim is the northern, like, province of Tamriel, right? Do you understand that?
Yes, yes.
So Arena is everything. Like, you can go to Skyrim as part of Arena, or you can go to Morrowind as part of Arena. Like, you can go to all of the other... You can go to all of the other places as part of this. That's the way to put it. So
that's huge.
It's really big. it's really, really big. And that's kind of the thing that makes it unique, you know, that you can go to any of the places. Now, there was only so much content, right? Like, that was the one thing about it. It was repetitive, because, like, Peterson said that they never realized people were going to play it as much as they did. So, like, they only wrote like 13 side quests and you end up doing them over and over and over and over. And the same thing for the villages. Like they're procedurally it's all procedurally generated, but there's only so much variation because, you know, even with procedural generation, you have to give your programming a basis to work with. And when you don't have a lot of variety in the basis, you don't gain variety on the procedural side of things. So there's a lot of, like, the villages look the same, the side quests tend to be the same. But the thing of it is like, there's a lot of content. There's a lot of content. And it may be repetitive by today's standards, but at the time, there was really nothing quite like the size of it. And that's what made it
That's what she said.
That's what she. Jesus.
That's also what she said.
Yeah, it's true. It's also what she said. You're right. You're right. You're right. No, that's install size. I'm looking for open world maps. Biggest open world maps of all time. Let's see where someone says it fits. No Man's Sky is the biggest. Elite Dangerous. That makes sense, huh?
Absolutely.
Daggerfall. So they have Daggerfall listed as 62,000 miles squared. So Daggerfall, according to them, is bigger than Arena. Is Arena on the list? I wonder if it's because they don't mark it as an open world the same way, because it's not to them. Because that would be a cheesy way out of it, because I know that it's bigger. It doesn't matter. Oblivion is 16 miles square. Skyrim is 15 miles squared. Lame.
Pretty lame.
Pretty lame. I know, right? That's pretty lame. Anyways, it is. It's one of the biggest open worlds. And I guess because it's procedurally generated, it doesn't always fall on the list. Because you can pretty much go anywhere and do anything. And in theory, there's no end to it. I mean, to me, that would put on the same list as No Man's Sky. And what was the other one I said that was like that? Oh, Elite, right? Those mm-hmm. are those. It put on the same as those.
I agree, it would.
I don't know, but that's the cool thing about it. They managed to put a quest in the middle there and do all the things and so on and so forth. You should go play it. I mean, it looks like a game from 1994, but it plays.
So, all right.
I mean, man, it's always fun to go and look at the old stuff. It's always fun to go with old stuff. It's the same story in every single one. The emperor gets betrayed, imprisoned, murdered, so on and so forth. And then they're, you know, you got to go and fight the bad guy.
Quite the novel concept there.
In this one, the emperor is betrayed by an imperial battle mage, and he's imprisoned in another realm. And so you have to, like, search the continent for the Staff of Chaos that allows you to bring the emperor back, thus bringing peace to the empire. So, it's fun.
Sounds fun. Like it would be. But you're mentioning you can go to all of the other realms or all of the other things that the other Elder Scrolls have been.
Yes.
Can you imagine that game to get remade with all of the quests from those other games in the newest graphics that they have available? How awesome that would be.
It would be, but technically, like,
is that ELO?
Yeah, exactly. ESO.
Okay, but good. Can we get it good?
Yeah, very true. Very true.
So yeah, they kind of botched that. Never mind. Take that back. Ignore everything I said.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. If they could bring all the games together in a modern map and not try to muddy it with the notion of a MMO, right? Because MMOs always change things no matter how much we want to say it doesn't.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, like, literally, like, you can go anywhere. You know, the Imperial Province, Skyrim, Morrowind, Hammerfell, High Rock, Valenwood, the Black Marsh, like, all of Tamriel is in there. And then each of the settlements, I mean, I'm looking at Hammerfell, 5, 10, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. And there's at least 30 settlements in Hammerfell. And each one of those, you know, High Rock has 30, Morrowind probably has more, Skyrim has just as, like, each of them has 30 settlements. So, I mean, you just, there's just no end to things in this game, right?
Yeah.
It literally is like thinking about Skyrim, but instead of it just being Skyrim, it's every other province on Tamriel. And that's the best way to put it, you know?
That is insane.
You know, that's the best way to put it. Okay, so the trio of Lefay, Peterson, and Lakshman, they moved on to the second Elder Scrolls game, which is Daggerfall. And then I could find direct confirmation that at least two of them, Lefay and Peterson, left Bethesda. Also found that they came back as contractors for the third game in the series, Morrowind. And then they all kind of fell off the radar until recently. I mean, I guess it's not that recently. But in 2019, they all popped up again. They announced that they were working on a new RPG called The Wayward Realms. Literally, it's a new open world RPG by the creators of the first two Elder Scrolls games.
Nice.
So it doesn't have a date or anything. But I did find a coming soon to Kickstarter video that has some snippets of gameplay. And well, it looks like an open world RPG. You honestly could have told me it was an Elder Scrolls game and I would have totally believed it, which is not a bad thing because, I mean, let's be honest, we're fans. We're fans. We've played them. Skyrim, we did a whole episode on Skyrim and we gushed about it the whole time. So we are fans of the Elder Scrolls series, you know?
Indeed, we are. Well, to a point.
I think we're fans.
All right.
So, and we know that Bethesda is still around. Bethesda is one of the biggest companies, one of the biggest publishers now. They're owned by Microsoft, an even bigger publisher. But they did Starfield? It was Starfield. I know. I'm joking because it flopped for a lot of people. They did Starfield recently. They do the Fallout series. That's what they're best known for. But they do other IPs too. There's some good ones that they've done. And they did announce a few years ago that they're working on Elder Scrolls 6. We don't know where it's going to take place or when it's coming out. That's what they're working on now. They said after Starfield, we're going to focus on Elder Scrolls 6. So that's what they're working on. So we get another Elder Scrolls. So Bethesda carries on. The Elder Scrolls carries on. These guys are working on a game, not with Bethesda, called The Wayward Isles. And now Todd Howard, who was just a little CD-ROM version tester in Arena, is the head honcho over there. That's it. That's the story.
Quite the story indeed, though, you know?
It's funny to think that they wanted to make this like medieval arena combat game, right? That's all it was going to be. Like, we've had those games since. You fight, probably fist fight your way through arenas, and like you gain notoriety and strength going from arena to arena until you're the champion. That exact system is built into most RPGs nowadays. And that's an exaggeration. Like, yeah, that's built into most RPGs nowadays. There is a version of an arena combat in a lot of RPGs nowadays. And that is where the Elder Scrolls started. That is where they thought they were going to be. They thought they were going to be just that. And somehow they went from just that to a whole continent of content that has now become the basis for 30 years of video games set on that content that people still adore to this day, which is crazy to think about.
Well, sometimes you just find a niche and you create it, you know. It takes is one, and once it takes off, you know, it's just amazing what it can do.
Very true. And now they've done they're working on Elder Scrolls 6, but there have been a ton of other games like Redfall and Blades. You mentioned Elder Scrolls Online, so there is an MMO that has been going on for years and years and years. So it's not just the main Elder Scrolls games anymore. Like, this has spawned a lot of titles that have been successful pieces of software for Bethesda, right?
Absolutely. There's no denying that. It's just, it's incredible where this just took off from and took off. That's, it took off.
It took
Take
off.
It off again. One more time. Take off.
It took off. It took off. And created a big company. You know, Bethesda does a lot of good things these days, so I can't complain about Bethesda at all. It's always fun to learn that they started out as just making a football game, of all things. That's where they started, a football game. They got tied up in the beginning of the Madden, and it fell, that like that relationship soured, so they went on to do their own thing. And their first big own thing ended up being the ground work to, you know, the foundation of the Elder Scrolls series. So anyway, there's a lot of things that tie into this. There was Madden, and there was Ultima, and there was Wizardry. We've done whole episodes on all of that. Each has its own really fascinating, unique story. And of course, if you want to check any of these stories out, you can do so by going to www.memorycardlane.com, which is our website. And on there, we have an archive with all of our old episodes. Rob, what else can people do on our website?
Well, Dave, speaking of episodes, you can find a calendar of our future episodes. Maybe give us a little hint on some small bit of the knowledge you have regarding one of the upcoming topics. You can find a link to our Discord where you can come hang out with Dave and I, tell him how wrong he is, or just, you know, talk about whatever you got on your mind. You can also find a link to our Patreon where you can help support us, get access to ad-free and unedited versions of our episodes. And you can find links to our social media where I am on several platforms as Rob_O_Raptor and Dave.
I can be found on various platforms as Dave_is_wrong. And yeah, that's that. Each week, ladies and gentlemen, we like to tell you a story relevant to the current week in gaming history. This week, we went back to 1994 to learn all about the beginning of the Elder Scrolls franchise, and that would be the first title, Elder Scrolls Arena. When we sit down to do a new topic and we do our research, we learn things. That's kind of what my goal every week is. I pick through all the things, and I try to find things that I don't know or that you don't know, because I like learning new things. And then in turn, I love sharing things, new things, rather, with people. It's this really beautiful cycle of learning and teaching and a recognition of it. Every week we go round table and we talk about our takeaways. So, Rob, what did you learn today?
Well, having no knowledge of Arena, it's kind of amazing to me that it consisted of like all of the different places among, you know, like that was the intent behind Tamriel, is like, I knew Tamriel was Morrowind and Skyrim and all of that, but like the fact that, I guess I never really thought of it being started all that far. I thought it was, oh, we built on it, we added it. And like to just know that there was any intent from the start, like, I guess I just never really think of that from the start. It's like, normally my thought is, oh, well, it did well, let's create more, not we have this whole thing. And then just the simple fact that it was used as for their D&D campaigns, that thinking of that, it makes sense how they would have all of it together now that I'm talking through it. But it's still really cool to take a concept from something that you enjoy so much and then be able to put it into a game that you get to enjoy so much. It's pretty freaking cool.
It is pretty freaking cool. You are right about that.
So what's up about you Dave, what's your big takeaway?
I had no clue that this wasn't originally planned on being like a full-blown RPG. They were going to stick with what they knew. They were going to make an action game that had a little bit of RPG in it. And then they realized that that wasn't as interesting as a full-blown RPG, and they just leaned into it. And I'm glad that they did. So I am glad that they did. All right. Well, that'll wrap it up on Elder Scrolls Arena. Welcome to the beginning of the Elder Scrolls series. We did an episode on Skyrim early on, so if you'd like to learn about the most recent game in the Elder Scrolls series, go ahead and check out that episode too, now that I'm thinking about it. But in the meantime, before I take it out of here and look at next week, Rob, is there anything that you'd like to add to today's episode?
Well, Dave, I do want to take one quick moment to say thank you so much to all of our listeners. It means the world to us to have you here, and we hope that you enjoy what you get to learn alongside Dave and I.
Very true. Very true. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we close the tome on the sprawling realms of Tamriel, having journeyed through the origins and legacy of the Elder Scrolls Arena, from its ambitious open-world design to the foundation that it laid for one of gaming's most relevant franchises. Arena's impact is as vast as the continent of Tamriel itself. Next week, we'll shift our gaze from the sprawling dungeons of Tamriel to the mystical lands of the Breath of Fire series. It has no name. I looked. At least the first game. Prepare to join us as we dive into a world where dragons roam, magic thrives, with a rich story of bravery and transformation inside of it. We'll explore the inception of this captivating series, its evolution across the gaming landscape, and how it carved its own niche into the hearts of RPG lovers. Until then, we want to remind you to save your progress, because you never know what adventures tomorrow might bring. So keep your swords sharp and your spells at the ready, for another adventure awaits just on the horizon as we take next week's trip down memory card lane. Do the thing.
Doobie da mba 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 mboo-ah.